welcome back to Overdunk, everybody, your favorite competitive Pokemon Unite podcast. This is episode 118, and this one is for the nerds. That actually implies that the rest of them weren't, and I'm going to live in that reality, but this one certainly is. We're talking rulebook. It finally dropped. I think I said it at the end of the last three episodes we've recorded. Bridget, you can attest to this. I was like, I really hope we know what championship points it does next episode, and we finally do. So we could talk about all the new changes that are happening this season. We talked about some of the broad strokes, like the events being at a few more international championships in previous episodes, but now it's time for the nitty-gritty. We're going to get into the details. It's going to be a lot of fun, but I got to remind everybody, I'm joined here by two of my favorite people in the entire world, Doofsnax and Bridget. Doofsnax, how have you been, my friend?
Doing great. Doing really good. Feeling good. Work is going well, which good. Is on a normal life thing. That's terrific. And then I get to be back here, which is dope. And I'm doing Underdunk this week, which is dope.
Hey, yo.
So I feel like I'm getting back in the swing of this Unite thing. Well-needed break, but I'm glad to be back. As that pendulum swings, right? You're like, I need a break. And then it's like, man, I really need to get back. Woo, whoosh. So we're swinging back the other way now. Feels good.
The Doofsnax sabbatical, definitely a positive outcome of the post-World season.
And, of course, today's the day that Spraggles decide to just dumpster a bunch of pictures of me on his Twitter timeline.
I don't know what you're talking about, dumpster. I think you look amazing in those photos.
Well, the first one was hilarious because it's a good Spraggles caption. And the other one, the volume of comments he's gotten on that picture, which is some form of me crapping my pants, is a bit much. It's a bit much.
Yeah. It's like Olive got a hold of 10 Twitter accounts and is writing them beneath that. Yeah. So I'm going to get my dad.
I don't need my daughter to just absolutely take me down a peg more than she already does on a daily basis.
Fair enough. Well, I saw a couple, not to gas you up too much, but I did see a couple that were like, Doofsnax looks like he's commentating like UFC. And I was like, yeah, he actually, I think, would crush at that. But
So there's like a series of photos, and the one, like, I guess before, so that's like the before, and the after is me like doing like a big like umpire safe sign.
Okay,
so like I don't really know what set that was, but it must have been a decent one.
That's a fun, like, deep trivia lore game. It's like taking a caster photo, be like, what match was this, what point of the game? That's for the real fans.
If you are that fan, I need you to not be that fan. You need to pull back.
No. You belong in this podcast, in this episode. It's for the nerds. Now, Bridget, how about you? How have you been? You were just on a trip. How was that?
Trip was great. Wow, I feel like I can't compete with that update. That was just comprehensive.
Has Spraggles posted a photo where it looks like you're crapping your pants?
I can't even touch that. I went to a football game.
Let's go!
I don't know what I did.
Did the team you were cheering for win?
No, they lost by 1 point in the last 10 seconds.
That's brutal, but kind of a banger game? I don't know.
It was a good game.
Okay. Good.
Well, so I'll take it.
All right. Yeah, as long as you had fun, I suppose that's good. But okay. Well, good to hear that everybody's in good spirits. Glad to have you back, Doofsnax, for real.
I just want to say, Zoinks, if my team lost the way the Bengals did against Kansas City, there would be nothing left standing around me. I just want you to understand the difference between Bridget being, yeah, it was a pretty all right game, and the level at which the Bills ruin 16 weeks of my life every year.
Oh, the sabbatical would have been going on indefinitely, I think, if Doofsnax was
dropping that way. You're not a Bengals fan if you don't expect disappointment, always, so.
Yeah. Well, okay, we have, I mean, the Bills are, I feel like, the best poised out of all of our football franchises, which, I mean, the Bears, it's been a minute, you know?
It has been.
Are we a sports podcast now?
Okay, welcome back to Overdunk, our fantasy football podcast. This would be the second fantasy sports podcast I've done before. That's crazy. Good lore. Again, this one's for the nerds.
Crazy.
Okay.
This one's for the nerds.
That is absolutely going on the thumbnail. Okay. Let's get into a few of our actual Pokemon Unite topics for today. We basically have two. The rulebook that we mentioned earlier on is going to be taking up a large part of it, but I wanted to start the discussion today with the newest release. We got Armourouge in-game now, finally the counterpart to Cerulege. I'm over lamenting that it's not a split evolution like Scyther Scizor or Urshifu Rapid or Single Strike, which I think it'd be amazing for, but that's fine. I honestly do think both Pokemon are cool and their movesets are unique enough that it justifies having two entire Pokemon. That's fine. I think the Pokemon's honestly a blast. I think the community is really taken to how exciting it is. Obviously, there is the monetary increases surrounding it. That's it was a big talking point that we talked about last week. But when we get down to it, Pokemon Unite is actually good at a few things. And one thing they are excellent at is totally nailing Pokemon design and like flavor wins. I think that armor cannon set, you feel exactly how you think armor should feel in game. The explosion damage, the range upgrade you get at 11. There's a lot of cool stuff. But question over to you two now. Bridget, I know you've been traveling a little bit, but have you had a chance to try Armourouge or play against Armourouge?
I actually bought Armourouge pretty much immediately.
Let's go.
I love mages, and this is like the first real mage we've had. I mean, the past two have been Maridon and Mewtwo, so not exactly my favorite playstyle. So I was very excited, and I've only tried the Armor Cannon Psyshock moveset, but I love it so much. It's so fun. Its plus upgrade is so good.
I think I tweeted this out, but I do think the Armor Cannon plus upgrade was like some of the most fun I've ever had achieving a plus upgrade in game. Like the first time I channeled it, I went, because all of a sudden my circle's big. And it's like not just your armor cannon, it's like also your auto attacks increase by size once you get that upgrade. It's so cool. Anyway, all right, I've rambled enough. Dupe Snacks, how about you? Played against, played it all around the new new attacker?
Played alongside of, played against. Character seems tons of fun. I haven't had a chance to play it quite yet, mainly because I was fighting for my life in this ranked ladder.
Right.
And that's normally not a platform for success for me if I just grab a new character. So I was really focused on hitting Masters first. But I'm excited to pick it up and start gaming with it, because I myself also liked the range mage action. So looking forward to that for sure.
Sweet. Yeah, and I think the other build too, we talked a lot about the mage end of things, but the fire spin flame charge build, you could technically go fire spin Psyshock. I would recommend it, but it kind of works sometimes because like you're still doing a ton of damage, but you do end up being this like brawler style, which at first I'm like, seeing an attacker, I'm like, great, are you just another all-rounder? But I think the key part of that build that makes it feel a little more unique than any other all-rounder with kind of that AoE damage, like I'm thinking Venusaur with Petal Dance, Giga Drain is like an attacker that kind of flows in that way, is like how when Armor uses one of its second moves, it now has like a shotgun auto attack. And I'm like, that's a really cool, unique mechanic now that we haven't had before, is like a little small burst AoE of an auto attack. And that is, I think, a ton of fun. Been really enjoying that build. I think if you ask most players, they're usually leaning towards the flame charge build being a little bit stronger. I don't know if that's just a metagame call. We're in definitely a very melee-focused metagame. We have been for, I mean, even pre-Worlds for quite some time, right? So it plays great into that. Fire Spin gives you a ridiculous amount of damage reduction right now. So it does quite well in those settings, but I really do feel like both movesets very viable. So great release overall. Quick blank out of 10 ratings from each of you on Armourouge on the release. Bridget.
Ooh. I would say like an 8 out of 10. Okay. I think it's really good and is a compliment to the meta. Didn't
cool
break the meta.
Okay, great. Yeah, that checks a lot of boxes. Do snacks?
Yeah, I was actually going to say an 8 asterisk out of 10 because I haven't gotten to play it yet, okay. So that might fluctuate. But that's just having played again alongside it and against it. That's how I feel. It's not like I walk into a lobby and I'm devastated that the other team has one. But it's been a lot of fun to play alongside of as well and learn how to support what it's trying to do, which is kind of cool. So
yeah. That's sweet. I'm going to give it that same ranking. I think we're all around 8 out of 10. With how positive I've been talking about it, I was leaning towards 9, but our chat did remind me, but its Unite move is the part of its kit that feels pretty lackluster. Not just in, like, competitive viability or anything. Just design-wise, it feels a little boring. You know, like, a Pokemon jumping into the sky and shooting a giant bomb at the ground feels like it could have been more fun. And it's just not right now. It feels pretty boring. Mm-hmm. It's like if Maridon only got to send down one meteor. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. It's
instead of strafe and send down 42 of them.
Yeah, exactly. We have the barrage of the stars from Maridon, and then, you know, you get one underhand softball pitch from Armorish. It just doesn't feel as good. So I do think that that could see some of them. Yeah, like Cinderace Unite move, but shorter range. You're at, like, way more of a risk. Also, I saw someone saying that it's tough. You get dived really easily while using your Unite move. Has anyone tested the Shedinja doll interaction? Can you channel it and then doll and the explosion still happens?
No way.
I don't know why you would ever want to, like, if that would ever be a thing, but, like, fire spin doll starting to not sound too bad. I'm coping. It's different, but it's kind of the same. But all right, I think 8 out of 10 all around is pretty solid. I do see this Pokemon maybe getting some changes to the Unite move eventually, but right now I think it's in a great balanced state. It's doing really well, and it's fun. So yeah, great release, Timmy. Well done. Okay. Let's switch over to the main topic of tonight. It is talking about the Unite Championship Series and the new rulebook that is dropped. I'm not going to bring up the rulebook on screen. I thought about it a little bit, so if you're watching on YouTube, sorry. We'll try to have a link to the official rulebook, or at least the page, in the description. But I just felt it'd be kind of boring if there's just a wall of text the entire episode. But I guess those are kind of our patch notes episodes. It's fine. No notes. But we did have our resident expert, super nerd, some would say, of Gamma behind the scenes, who knows these rules very intimately, gave us a great list of basically all of the major to even some of the minor, but more important minor changes that we saw in these rulebooks. So without further ado, before we just go kind of top down in this list, I feel like we should talk about some of the ones that, like, kind of jumped off the page to anybody. And we can kind of jump to those first, because those are, like, the big important ones. So, Bridget, I think I asked you before, is there any of the changes that you were like, dang, that's crazy, that's big and new?
I mentioned it beforehand, and maybe isn't the most exciting change for players, but for a viewer, I'm very excited we're getting day 3 for Worlds. Yeah, for Worlds, and Zlinks was saying we will have it for UIC and NAIC as well, I think. I
believe so, yeah. Denoted in the new world book, I believe it is stated that we will have that third day slot for both of those days. I'm like 99% sure that is in the rule book. Because Chris Euros was tweeting about it already. So yeah, I think that's sick. I have been wanting this for a long time. Deucenax, I know you and I have talked about it a lot. We've kind of debated it, whether it would be a good thing or a bad thing, right? You don't have that tournament momentum, you know, of that grand finals after a whole long day of tournament. The crowd's, like, been invested all day. I feel like NAIC, maybe this last year, but maybe even the year before, like, was, like, one of the best examples of, like, okay, this is why having the grand finals on this Saturday is good, because that crowd was there from, like, dawn till dusk, like, love and unite. And so now it's going to be a little bit different, but I mean, we get to be on twitch.tv/Pokemon. It's that main all house crowd. It's pretty exciting stuff. But anyway, Deuce, next, your thoughts on that change.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. We'll see where they put us. I think my heart tells me it's going to be first.
Yeah.
That's what my heart tells me. But in terms of just what that means overall, right? So maybe the crowd is more sparse if you're first, fine. But especially with EUIC, I actually think we hit a really good place kind of globally for viewership starting off. Because, like,
what, like, super late night NA, but good time Japan, good time EU?
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm thinking, if I'm thinking of that right. Because if it starts like 9 a.m. Europe time, oh no, that's
like 1 or 2 a.m. in some North American spots, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I was trying to, like, figure out some time zones and see how that would work. I think, no, what I was thinking of was Worlds in California. That's what I was thinking. Because it first picks up everybody in the EU.
Yes.
Because it's
yes.
went pretty well. Mm-hmm. It obviously picks up North America well. Central America picks up Central America very well. Mm-hmm. I think Japan will always tune up. So, sorry, I misappropriated to EUIC what I was thinking for Worlds because it's in California.
Yeah.
Thinking of that, the day three is going to go really well. In terms of that, it's exciting to be on day three. Main broadcast is always good. There's going to be a lot more eyes on there regardless of the mm-hmm. time of day just because of what the channel is. So I think it's a net positive thumbs up. I just hope that the folks that are there in person for Unite, make it a point to go support in person because it's kind of becomes one of those collective efforts, right? Like everybody needs to make it what we believe it and what we want it to be. Not getting out of bed to not go cheer on one best of five,
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily bode well as the collective either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Relic mentioning that they're not happy that it's just one series. Unite does take a little bit longer, especially when it's all best of five. So.
May there will be scope for change. No, that's never going to happen. It's impossible to plan around multiple best of fives in Unite specifically. It shoots the entire day down. They'll have to add a fourth day for that to even become a consideration. As long as it's 3 days, we're never going to get more than one.
Right.
And all the other games only have their finals that day as well. Yeah.
Except for Go. But this year at Worlds, Go was this. Yeah. that is true and it's not, right? Because every other game does have only its finals, but it's also the only time that juniors and seniors get to be on broadcast, which is different, but also exciting. Like, you got to think, Pokemon as a whole, Relic and I were talking about this on Twitter a little bit. Like, we're going back and forth in replies of, like, the positives and negatives. In the end, this is just how Pokemon does it. For that to change, I think that's like, if that ever does change, that's probably years in the future, if that ever does see a monumental shift. So for now, I definitely think it will just remain the same. One thing I'm actually interested in is just what players think of it. I have to imagine players are pretty excited about it. Like, the two grand finalists get a night to prep specifically for the other team. That's really exciting. That's always a fun talking point in the other games, which obviously you're locked into your strategic choices in terms of selection, and VGC you're locked into your team of six, and TCG you're locked into your deck choice going into the next day for your grand final, and you can just hyper analyze. But in Unite, you got plenty of tape of that team throughout the tournament, their draft strategies. I think it'll be really fun. We might see like a big shift from a team that they played this way all day long, but all of a sudden they're putting new attackers in bot lane, they're finding mm-hmm. something new, and I think that's gonna be cool. So I'm very excited about that. So yeah, definitely great call, Bridget. Big change having the tournament end and conclude on Sunday. If there are some negatives, I think the positives way outweigh them, in my opinion. So pretty pumped for that. Okay, Deuce next. Any of these changes that were big and exciting or just interesting to you that you want to jump into first?
Yeah, there's two. I'll start with the one I'm second most excited about, and it's player names may not change for the entirety of the season. And man, do I love that one. That be still my heart. Yes. That is so, so strong. Utah, Megu, sorry about you. Figure it out. You can't change every 11 minutes or whatever. The other thing that is very exciting and my number one personally is how the championship points are going to be awarded, and it's by team.
Yes.
And that signals to me that they're looking there being like Pokemon is looking to make this more enticing for organizations to get into the scene, right? Mm-hmm. One way to do that is to mitigate the amount of changes, the volatility of just this natural esports ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So I really like how they did that. They built in what seems to me at least a reasonable way to make adjustments to your team throughout the year without sacrificing all of your prior success in terms of championship points. But I also like how championship points are committed to a team, but there is no qualification through championship points. So you still got to get in there and do well at one of these big time events, which I think in and of itself is super exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No CP world slot this year sucks. I could not disagree more.
Oh, really? I agree. Yeah. Well, with the format this way, I don't think you could do it, but I do. I do think that. All right, I think that's maybe where we should jump onto first. We will talk more about championship points being awarded to teams and not players in a moment. But I do think that was an elephant in the room. It was what a lot of people latched onto immediately, is what championship points actually do this year. So I want to break it down in its totality for people to understand. So no longer will you get awarded a world championship slot for finishing top of the leaderboard on championship points throughout the season. Instead, championship points will now auto-qualify you out of the open qualifier for regionals. You will move immediately to the group stage of your regionals. I believe right now in the rulebook, it is the top 12 teams in each region, top 12 on the championship point leaderboard, will get auto-qualified into the group stage. The open qualifier regional that every region, every UCS region, right, so every Western region that will have, will be a double elimination bracket like it's always been, but only four teams will make it into the group stage. So now it is a lot more incentive to qualify championship points throughout the year, because if you don't and you just sign up for one tournament and try to spike it, you have to be top four out of a double elimination bracket. Granted, a double elimination bracket that doesn't have the top 12 teams in it, but still, an interesting way to do that. Then you move on to group stage, and now the world slots will be awarded to the regional champion and the second and third place finishers, depending on how many world slots your region has. A big change. I just rambled for a while. So, Bridget, give me your thoughts on that, that being different.
It is definitely a lot to wrap my head around, just because I feel like people really didn't like that championship points didn't exist year one, basically, right, the whole TTV of it all. But going, I feel like there's more infrastructure in place this year where, like you guys have said, I feel like you're still getting rewarded for the consistency and gaining those championship points, but you still have to turn out, I guess, at the end of the season, which I feel like does kind of matter more since it's closer to what the world's meta now will be. So
that's big, right? Is you, if you have a team that qualifies extremely early in the season, there's always the chance that they will not perform up to a world's level by the world championships. Now, the tough part is I don't really have any evidence to point to this year, because Fusion are the only team that qualified really early automatically, and they absolutely crushed it world. So it's tough to kind of bring up that argument with no clear evidence to it. But yeah, it is interesting. But Dupes next. Talk to me about the new allocation with championship points.
Yeah, so I agree that nobody liked it year one, but it's because in monthly tournaments, you were playing for effectively nothing, right? Championship points didn't mean anything, and there was no money on the line. There is some money on the line for these monthly events. There's a lot more monthly events as well. So it gives a good opportunity to accrue championship points. It also gives your team breathing room if, man, you just do not want to play in March. You know what I mean? Like, it's too difficult for your team, or your team needs to decompress. Whatever, like that you don't feel like you're sacrificing a ton of equity by just missing one event. All you're kind of missing is like, okay, a chance to crack at some cash, you know, play some games, whatever. The other thing about just championship points in general is it fostered a very bad environment that, you know, that I guess the argument you could make is the rosters by the championship points by team now kind of mitigates, but it still causes a flurry, right? Of player switching, of other stuff like that. And if you have to build a system where you have to win or do really well in an event to qualify for Worlds, and the flip side of that is we get money at all the monthly tournaments and the potential of establishing a somewhat stable ecosystem for sponsorships to come in, because it actually makes sense to support players for an extended amount of time. I'm willing to give that a shot. And at least you know, not to be a complete doomer here, if everything goes sideways and this is miserable, there is one thing that Unite has shown itself to do that the other games have been much harder adjusting on. It's year-to-year changes to try to continuously improve. Mm-hmm. And you can crap on Unite all you want, but off-seasons, they put a lot of time in to try and develop the next step forward to keep this thing growing, to keep this thing making people happy, to keep people invested. And I think they've been successful every year improving on it. So I'm remaining positive in this particular aspect. And I'd like to see if this stabilization of our player ecosystem, you know, at the expense of the championship point invite, if it brings sponsors in, like it's really tough to bet against that, yeah. You know, if that's what happens. Mm-hmm. So, I'm in for it.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely am alongside you two. I think you've outlined all the positives extremely well. I do kind of feel a little sad about we're losing some of the reward of just consistent performances. Now that mm-hmm. is mitigated in the prize pools, right? So that is supposed to be in there, but this is one thing about anything competitive Pokemon, whether it be TCG, Go, VGC, or Unite, it's, for better or for worse, all eyes always point towards Worlds. That is always where everyone, that's what everybody cares the most about, and sometimes to a degree of where other tournaments and stuff kind of get shoved under the rug because, like, whatever. Like, all it is we're just getting closer to a World slot. Like, that is the only thing that we're actually, like, competing for, which, I think that creates this animosity where people are a little upset about not having something to show for doing incredibly well every single tournament. And if you bomb out in the group stage regionals, all of a sudden all of that didn't matter. But Bridget, you bringing up, like, I mean, having qualifiers near the world championships that are going to be the most relevant at the time are super important. And ending with a big giant tournament, of course, is some of the most exciting stuff. So, yeah, I am interested. I think the question I have is really, is it going to matter, you know, this year?
Sure.
If we look at NA, this change would not have mattered at all. All the top teams that are regionals wouldn't have shifted anything. EU, it would have changed a ton, right? So mm-hmm. Gek and Klaus's team, they would have been going to Worlds instead of the Talibobo squad. That Zervis and all them went on. Obviously, they had to drop out of the tournament for World Championships for apparently a variety of reasons, and that's why Rival went. So it's better stated saying that Rival went instead of that squad with Gek and Klaus and them. So I really don't know which one is better, right? Like, that team performed all year. In fact, a lot of the players on Gek's roster only played in one tournament that whole year, and it was that tournament.
What's that speak for the region, though, big dog? I think that's the real point, is sure. how do they just get to cobble together a squad and run roughshod through everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, in this new setting, it will be a harder path, right? The double elimination bracket will be a little more difficult for them to get into the group stage. You will probably be one of the bottom seeds. I assume they'll be the four bottom seeds in each group, so the chance mm-hmm. you will have of going into the top seeded team in your region is very high. And I do think we're getting to the point where seeding does matter. I know I was wrong about that in season one, but I do think we're getting to that point. So it's interesting. This was like the one change that maybe there's two changes that I'm pretty hesitant on, but this was definitely one of them. Also, we had somebody mentioning, I think Relic was talking about the transfer windows. There are more than one transfer window. I think the transfer windows are basically after almost every monthly tournament, if I remember correctly.
Basically.
But it's like within 2 weeks of the event starting that that kind of closes. The only exception to that, or asterisk, is if your team qualifies, for example, EUIC or NAIC, the open play-ins, if you qualify as that roster, you are not allowed to change that roster until post that event. Because those events, the play-in tournament is much earlier than the actual event, like multiple months in some cases. So when you compete there, you're not allowed to change it. So there are a lot of opportunities to change, but, and I see the benefit or example of it, of there only being like one or maybe two transfer windows throughout the year, like really forcing teams to stick together. But in this case, there are already so many huge changes. I think it's safe to be like, hey, let's just small changes. Let's give some flexibility, especially for the first year trying hard roster locking like this, like we're doing this year. I think it's like better, more safe than sorry. But yeah, okay. We talked a lot about that. We were on something else before, though, right? Championship points being awarded to team, not player. So this is something we did talk about when we had the announcements for this season four earlier on. Bridget, mm-hmm. I believe you were on that podcast. Tube Snacks, you might have been on that podcast too, actually. I don't know if you were on that show or not, but maybe it was Wonder Chef. I'm losing track of our hosts, but... yeah, that change is interesting. Now, there's a couple of exceptions to this rule, and I think that, like, in most cases, Pokemon Unite or, you know, Championship Series kind of holds the right to be kind of arbiter in some of these situations, which I think is a good thing with how I break it down. So basically, you're allowed to change two players every transfer window. So basically, post every event, you're allowed to change two of your players on the roster, and that team will retain the championship points they earned in the previous tournament. Those two players that leave or go find a different team, they will not be taking those championship points with them. The only other rule is that for a team to still carry the championship points, they need to have at least one player from that original roster on it. And you can see there's multiple transfer windows, so eventually you could transfer away all the original players. Now the question is, where are the championship points? Now the rules kind of state that it kind of depends on the situation. It could be like foregone. They leave the room to kind of look at context and see where they need to get allocated. But the way it kind of reads on paper is that essentially the team captain carries those points, or the origin point of the team carries those championship points, which is where my hesitation comes in, but I do think it's still a positive change. I'm just a little worried about some things that could happen throughout the series. But anyway, that's my upfront thoughts. Dupesnex, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's a general positive change. Again, trying to bring stability to the entire ecosystem. But I also think having to have a successful tournament run, at least... So it does a good thing, because CP isn't ridiculously important, but playing for money kind of is.
Yeah.
It brings balance. And also, there's a reason to not just implode your squad after one bad event, because there's more events. You're technically only really... You're losing on maybe CP and some money, but, like, it's not the end of your season. Like, if you have two bad months in a row or whatever at these monthly things for CP, you can still cruise forward. So it incentivizes teams to, once they find the right mix of players, to actually grow together and get to the finish line. And that stabilizes everything. And if all it took was, you know, kind of making it kind of a, you know, a less than convenient process to just throw people to the curb and get new people on, right? So you have to be more calculated in how you're making these decisions. Then hell yeah, like, bring it on. I think it's just a naturally good thing for this to begin with. So even if we have big organized play changes in the future, I think this is one thing that is going to stick regardless of the future direction. So a change that I welcome, and a change that I think is going to stick around.
Yeah. And at very least, the ideology of this path, right? Like, whether it's these changes or not, maybe, but I do think that, like, this path forward, yes, will most likely stick around. I totally agree there. Bridget, I see some chat talking about some cool stuff. We'll mention that right after this question. But Bridget, I want to hear your thoughts on team captains kind of carrying the points, or essentially team carrying the points. And actually, I'm so sorry, before I get your thoughts on that, I wanted to mention too, one thing we haven't talked about, and Deucenex, you've kind of alluded to a couple situations where you can't make an event, or right now it's just too stressful at your team, and you had a bad performance, but the season's not over. There is a best finish limit now imposed this year for the first time, which is really, really cool. I think that is a super positive change, but basically, only your top six events will count towards your championship point total. Now, if you win six events, theoretically, other than prize money, is no reason to keep competing outside of holding that championship points, other than to stay fresh and win some cash. But there are built-in components to the season to just make it easier, like a little bit less of a marathon, especially with the season extending. I think it's a very, very positive change. But okay, Bridget, championship points and how they work this year.
I was going to talk about best finish limit, but
I opened my big mouth.
Fine.
Well, talk to me about best finish limit. What do you like about it?
I was just going to say the same thing you did. It's a cool positives change. So yeah, I don't really have anything else beyond what you guys have said, really.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think, yeah, it's been talked about quite a bit. I think in the end of the day, like I mentioned before, I'm just curious to see if it matters. So let's wait and see this season and see how the actually thing moves on. Okay. Ooh, interesting. Just got a live rules update from our correspondent, Gamma, who's got his the mega nerd, he's got his nose in the book. One thing, the best finish limit has tiebreakers. So the tiebreaker for best finish limit will incentivize the most recent tournaments for championship points. So if the teams are tied in terms of championship points, in terms of qualification for group stage or seeding, those will be determined by who earned those points more recently, like where those points are coming from. So just, again, more of a focus on performing well at the end of the season when it matters the most. I think that's fair. But cool. Okay. Let's take a break for the rules quick, just because chat was chatting about it. I like talking about this stuff. There's a lot of talk about orgs in the scene. I think Japan's at like 4 mega orgs now. We're now in Pokemon Unite pre-season, and Japan season's wild. They have a lot of grassroots events, but their official events, they have like, you can play in a maximum of 2 of them, which is crazy. So it's cool to see the org investment already, but it's fun to dream. Any esports organizations out there that you think would be really cool if they joined Unite. Deucenex, you just finished watching TI. any esports orgs that you think would be really cool to join?
In the vein of TI, wouldn't mind seeing Gaming Gladiators come back.
Okay, yeah.
Who just finished second at TI. I mean, they were kind of the first one in, if you remember, for those of you that remember year one. So it'd be nice to see them close the loop. Any large NA org that is realistic about what the goals are, and I know this is going to chap everybody's butts out here, I actually think Moist would be a really good one to jump in.
Yeah.
I know Charlie kind of dumpstered the the game itself on release with a little bit of ignorance out there. But Moist just how they approach, they understand that it's not necessarily a money-making endeavor, but it's to support cool and positive things, I think is a very realistic cap to wear. And again, I've always said this, Unite is one of the safest esport bets you can make because the barrier of entry cost-wise is so incredibly low. And the fact that everything is propped up by Pokemon, one of the strongest IPs on the planet, makes it pretty guaranteed on your exposure level to some degree, right? You're going to get highlighted to some degree and through official Pokemon accounts when you win and when your team does well, right? And that just naturally brings more eyes out there as well. So I think just if we're speaking of NA orgs, I think that would be one as well.
Okay.
So I'll just say those two.
Cool. I like those. Bridget, I don't know. Are you super familiar with like esports as a whole, like organizations and stuff? I'm not sure of your esport history.
I am not the guy to be asking about esport orgs.
Okay. Any that were said in chat that sound fun or cool?
Like, I recognize the names, but I don't really know any of their like reputations, so I don't really want to like
yeah, that's fair enough.
Vouch for anything I don't understand.
Yeah, Chesse, 100 Thieves even had a Pokemon collab. That is true. They had a really cool merch collab. Cloud9's the one that I would really like. I'm a big Cloud9 fan. I like seeing them quite a bit. But yeah, there's a lot of esports orgs out there. I think personally, I mean, sky's the limit. That is true. We got some really cool orgs involved, especially in the East, Japan in particular. But I think there's like a couple of organizations that in NA would be more realistic, like there's like a lot of like mobile gaming organizations that are not in Unite yet, and it kind of shocks me. Like the one that comes to mind all the time is Tribe. Like I'm pretty shocked that Tribe is not step foot in the game. I know they're primarily involved in all the Supercell titles like Clash Royale and all those games, and yes, admittedly, I know that's a organization that pays the orgs to play their game. It's like a part of their marketing wing, which I don't think Pokemon's doing. But yeah, Space Station Gaming is another great, great rep in that consideration. So yeah, I think there's stuff that could, Moist and TSM were talks with teams at some point. I heard that too, but that was like year one, I think, was when that was happening. So it'd be really cool to see that happen. But okay, cool. Enough org talk. Let's get back into some nerd talk. More rules. Okay, let's hit just a couple of these shorter ones. 12 tournaments in total, 8 online tournaments, 5 monthly cups, 2 play-ins, and then regional championships will all be online now. We already knew that. 4 in-person events. So LAIC will just be an open bracket, AOS Cup at EUIC, and Final Stretch at NAIC. And of course, Worlds. One thing I wanted to talk about, we talked about how the regionals format has changed. So have the open formats for AOS Cup and Final Stretch. Now, both those tournaments will have play-ins, so they will have teams that are given the travel award and like taken to compete at these events to represent their region, have a chance at winning a world spot, of course, and a bunch of prize money, right? I think both those tournaments are now at $50,000. And then I think LAIC is $25,000, so which does mean that AOS Cup went down in prize money because it used to be $100,000, but now Final Stretch has prize money and LAIC has prize money. So you can kind of see the allocation, and it technically got buffed a little bit if you consider the overall. But anyway, now the way these tournaments work is when you want to sign up for the Open, you get automatically sent into that group stage. And basically the rules only state that there will be no groups larger than 4. So they will just kind of fill in groups up to, I guess, the 64 team cap, potentially. And then that will be played out, and then it will be single elimination bracket the following day. I don't know for certain if teams that win the play-ins are automatically put into the single elimination bracket or not, but seeing as it's single elimination, I do not think that would be the case. I believe they will just be put into groups. So yeah, that is where they will be at that spot. Yeah, any thoughts on that one, or is that just
You know, the 64 teams is going to be tough, I think,
just to hit for that. Yeah,
for the first crack. It's nice that they're planning for that much room. That is a good thing. You can kind of get an understanding of what they're trying to lay the groundwork for. Mm-hmm. So I'll again remain cautiously optimistic that we can kind of push that threshold and turn this into a very cool and robust event. You know, using this year as a launching point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bridget.
Yeah, definitely zero complaints about LAIC being included into the mix. I know we kind of glanced over the online tournaments, but I do think it's pretty cool that we're starting a lot earlier this year.
Yeah, that's that true.
Our first monthly cup is in November, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really early, which is cool. Wait, am I getting my schedule wrong? Is LAIC or first monthly cup first?
LAIC is first.
That's crazy.
Pretty sure, yeah.
That's so sick that it's like LAN and then Monthly Cup right after. Wild.
Yeah, well,
maybe December's the first one.
Yeah, December's the first one for sure.
Oh, okay. That was, yeah, okay. I see. Got it. But yeah, that'll be really cool. Obviously, the schedule change is something that I think we're all super excited about. More Unite, more fun. Okay. Alternates. So this is one positive that we haven't really talked about too much when talking about the championship points being awarded to teams, not players. This is huge. Like all of a sudden, alternates are good and are an interesting thing to work off of. So this will be pretty cool. So now alternates, of course, since the championship points stick with the team, if an alternate is used for an event, it's not like they're stealing those points and the team will result in lower championship points. Instead, alternates can fill in for an event. Now, here are the exact rules for alternates as laid out in the rulebook, or at least in the footnotes that we were given. If you want to use an alternate in one of your matches in a tournament, first off, the lower seed has to declare if they're going to use an alternate. Then the higher seed gets to decide if they're going to use an alternate player. The alternate must play every game in that match. And then, of course, every team has to have an alternate for in-person events. That's the same rule that was there last year. I think, well, maybe there was exceptions, but I think for the most part, you're supposed to have an alternate for in-person events. But great change. The idea of bringing in a pinch hitter alternate, like mid tournament at some point, like you're going like, oh, this team only plays dive. We need a really good anti-dive player. Like we just need a good Dodrio to win this match. And you bring them in. I think that'd be sick. The reality of it is we're playing in a draft and ban format, so the idea of hiding that secret and it actually playing out like that is pretty low, but I do think the overall changes to alternates are absolutely fantastic. Thank goodness they actually work now. Easiest thing to point to is like Luminosity Gaming and that account sharing fiasco and stuff. If these rules were here previously, like if the format worked in a different way, they would have never had to do something like they did, right? And so... this change is really, really good. A really, really positive thing. So, big fan. Deuce Next Bridge, any thoughts on alternates?
I think you laid it out.
Great, great. Cool. Yeah, the player and team name, just team name changes we already talked about. They get locked in for the entire season. Technically, there's, like, some more clauses on team name appropriateness, so... Bye-bye some of those weirdo names.
The team names that were weirdo names weren't even good names. Like, they weren't even, like, getting cut off from fun. They were just objectively terrible. It's like, oh, no, you can't use this awful name that isn't funny and objectively sucks.
Okay, Orange Team was kind of funny.
Yeah.
It was gutter water.
ABCD was worse.
Was exponentially better than Orange Team? Orange Juicers, which if they hadn't been forced off of Orange Team, they wouldn't have landed in a much better spot.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying it's funny.
Still mourning Flamin' Hot Dodrios. Here's a tip. Don't put a Pokemon in your team name because you'll be forced to change it.
Yeah.
Just too bad. Oopsies.
Well, they didn't. No, but yeah. That was a bummer. It was a cool name. I do think that it is a bummer that they don't allow Pokemon in team names. That is a big bummer. But overall, yeah, I think it's fine. As bad of a name as ABCDEFGHIJKL was, I do think the bit of a team entering with the final half of the alphabet was very funny.
Awesome.
That was awesome. M through Z, shout out to them for really reading the room and locking down a good bit. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, teams, keep up the weird names for grassroots tournaments, though. I think they're funny. Like Mew World Order, Flamin' Hot Dodrios.
Mew World Orders was sick. That was so good.
I think Flamin' Hot Dodrios is crazy too.
It's very good.
Like there were some good ones out there. But hey, shout out to those guys. I think they're still signed by GoGo. So awesome. Go check. They're still crushing it. So no longer with that name anyways. Okay. We talked about transfer window a little bit. This designated time between each event to allow roster changes, but then you do have to lock it in place. Absolute wonderful news for a podcast. That covers the championship series. Pretty big fan of that. We can like see the locked in rosters via StartGG probably before each of these tournaments, which is really cool. Roster lock after qualifying for it. Yeah, we already talked about that. And then there's just like a few more caveats to try to prevent some more cheating, like account sharing and stuff like that. Also making its way into this new rule book. But whew, I think we did it. I think we talked about all the big changes. I think we've done it. The rule book for this season, definitely a lot of new things. I think the things that people are mostly concerned about, I think they're just kind of surrounded by question marks, but I think there's a lot of really positive, cool changes. We talked about how there's a lot of changes positively towards accessibility, which of course the best finish limit is providing that. Also, with championship points being a little bit lesser value, it does mean that traveling to some of these international events is no longer mandatory, whereas last year, it really felt if you weren't traveling to EUIC, you were... playing really far from behind, and it was going to be a tough season no matter what. So, another cool thing.
Sorry, I cut
no,
you
no, it's
off,
okay. I was rambling. You're good.
The other thing that it's kind of cool is consistent. You know, consistent finishes may not rack up CP or whatever in a way that qualifies you, But consistent high-level finishes gets your team money on repeat, which means you actually have, like, a financial incentive to be able to, like, man, if we do top three in four monthlies or whatever, we've got a good crop of money to take us to NAIC or whatever, right? Or, you know, so I know that's kind of an NA-specific thing, but, you know, on our side of the globe, all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, we won. Look at Fusion all of a sudden, right? Like, if they win, or Mazo's team in Brazil, like, if they win every single monthly, all of a sudden NAIC doesn't become an absolute crap fest, because it's like, oh, well, we did just bank 6 monthlies worth of cash. Yep. You know what I mean? And we can actually make this NAIC trip a real probability to go game for that 50K. So I know it's very heavily weighted on our side of the globe. I'm not going to discount that. But that is something to think about, and should not be easily dismissed either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think prize pools are an interesting talking point because they do feel a little low, but I think it's fair to see why. Like, this game is rapidly expanding and chasing lands and trying to be huge. So clearly the budget isn't there for prize pools as of yet. I mean, they're still pretty good in a lot of regards for some of the tournaments. They could be bigger. I would like them to be bigger, but I think with the rapid expansion, trying to make more tournaments work, more big prize pools for those, and then, of course, paying out for monthly finals across the board is tough.
Listen, can I say just one more thing about that?
Sure.
If you want these prize pools to go up, and I don't mean you specifically, I mean the collective you, if you want the prize pool to go up, tune into your monthly finals.
Yes.
Log in, open your Twitch account, walk away from your computer. You don't have to be an active viewer, but holy smokes, those numbers have to be up. Mm-hmm. Watch the VODs on YouTube. If it's in person, show up and be in those stands. If we're going to be the first match on Sunday, and cheer your heart out because you're there anyways and you supposedly care about Unite. So, like, this is truly an everything. Every person needs to be a part of this growth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Unite, compared to the other games, was given tons of money versus where the other games started, right?
For sure.
They have some eyes on the prize for this. But we all need to do our part to push it in that direction. I think, you know, from a production side, from like our broadcasts, I think we have a great product. We need to make sure people are tuning into that. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? That's stuff that we talk with Pokemon about all of the time. You know, the drops, the things like that, making sure those are getting better, improved, that there's enough for everybody, all that stuff. These are things that we're working on our end. But at the end of the day, if you're not clicking on Pokemon Unite when it goes live, what do you mean? Well, there's not enough money in it. Well, obviously, because no one's watching, right? Like, come on. We all got to get our collective head out. We have to do our part. And if for you at home, you actually care, the one thing you can do when the thing goes live is fire up your desktop, make sure it doesn't go to sleep, tune in, have the volume on so your view counts, and walk away to have the rest of your day if you don't actually care about tuning in all afternoon. But tune in, obviously, the whole time. Obviously.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you're not going to, at least do the bare minimum to support the scene you pretend to care about. And if you're in this chat, I assume that you care enough about the scene to continue moving forward. So just do that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Please, just do that stuff.
For sure. I agree. Cool. That's a really good point. Okay, I had a couple things in chat while we were talking about some other stuff. DM was asking, any discussion on former EXs hoping that they're allowed? I don't see a reason why they wouldn't be allowed in tournament play. I think season 4 is going to be EX Pokemon. I don't know that for sure. Caveat.
There are no EX Pokemon anymore, so.
That is true. There are no EX Pokemon in Ba Sing Se. I think they're back. Teams just start getting ready on how to play them. If you want to play an underdunk every 2 weeks, they're back. They're in the game. So go check it out. The tournament's been really fun. Go play some. I think game-breaking bugs is going to be where the line's kind of drawn by the organizers. That's always been kind of their thought on that. But cool. I think we're almost close to ending. Before we even get into the final rollout and everything, we did want to mention, we've been mentioning at the end of each episode, October 19th, next month, we are bringing back the Unite Mike's Charity Classic stream, a 16-hour stream all day long, and a huge part of that is the Charity Classic tournament. So if you're a team, I really hope you're interested in playing for that one. Again, we're going to have a lot more details posted about that very, very, very soon. So keep an eye out for that one. Two snacks. I was telling the people we have another piece of unique Unite Mike's merch, most likely. It'll be hitting shelves potentially. It's Duke Snacks is very, I think we're all excited about it, but Duke Snacks is like very excited about it. So
this is all him.
This is all Snacks. There's some really cool stuff. We have a lot of fun planned for the whole stream, for the event as a whole, but definitely the heart of the whole thing is the tournament. So keep an eye out on, we'd love to have people compete in it. Obviously October, right before LAIC, a little bit before December, start learning the roster and things like that, but that is the big plug before the plugs, if you will. So let's get into some of the old end of episode stuff. Doofsnacks, anything you want to shout out before we get out of here?
Yeah, follow at Big Bridget on Twitter. Tune in October 19th. I think we've got a better strategy for the merch this time. We at least have something. It's pared down, but it's going to be, I'm excited. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a good incentive for everyone. I think it's going to be a lot easier to manage on everybody's part, which will lead to, I think, more success. So tune in there. Follow Big Bridge. I already said that. And tune into Underdunk this week on Thursday.
Yeah, it'll be sick. Yeah, Underdunk's gonna be a lot of fun. We're gonna have the Unite Mics duo back on the mic, which is, I feel like it's been forever, Deep Snacks, so I'm really excited about that. It's gonna be awesome. Bridget, any shout outs for you?
I don't think so.
Cool.
Zoinks, make sure you write down my Twitter handle. I know you forget it sometimes.
I will never remember. And with that, we will talk to you all next week's episode. It's crazy to think that we finally know what championship points do. Wild stuff out here, everybody. We'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.